We learn from David Yearsley in his study, Bach's Feet, that Bach was both one of history's greatest organists and one of its most famous walkers. Walking mapped out his early life. He was poor, and walking was the only way to get where he wanted to be, both geographically and artistically. Orphaned at 10, he likely walked the 25 miles from Eisenach to his brother's house in Ohrdruf. The journey of 1700 that took him to Lüneburg to musician Georg Böhm, some 5 years later, was one of about 200 miles. His repeated trips to Hamburg were the Lüneburg Bach's youthful visits to hear the famed organist of the Katharinenkirche, Johann Reinken, and also reflected his eagerness to learn from his elders. The journey was a 40-mile round trip, probably lasting 2 days in each direction. Bach's longest journey is one of the most famous outings in the annals of German walking. The obituary of 1754 relates that while Bach was in Arnstadt, he was once moved by the particularly strong desire to hear as many good organists as he could, so he undertook a journey, indeed on foot, to Lübeck in order to listen to the famous organist of St. Mary's Church there, Dietrich Buxtehude. The writer of this passage, Bach's son, Carl Philipp Emanuel, stresses the mode of transport as physical proof of Bach's commitment to learning, one so strong that he made a journey of some 250 miles to Lübeck, and then covered that same distance again on his return to Arnstadt. Words of David Yearsley. It borders on amazing that Bach covered so much ground on foot, many of those miles logged in a quest to learn from the masters of the previous generation, most notably Dietrich Buxtehude. We realize that measuring distances in his day was variable. No standard had yet been set. But there were, no doubt, Meilensteine, or milestones along the way, to mark the distance from Arnstadt to, say, Lübeck, to hear Buxtehude perform. Author Elbert Hubbard has seized on the metaphorical meaning of milestone, writing that Bach's visit to Buxtehude formed another critical milestone in his career. As we know, we can measure our lives in many ways, in geographical ways, where we've lived and worked or visited. Metaphorical ways, such as encountering someone or experiencing something that changes our life, and of course, measuring the time of our lives, the days, months, and years, anniversaries and such. We're invited to encounter this measuring by milestones this weekend in a musical program titled A Celebration of Milestones, as the Arcadia Chorale presents the 37th Annual Northeastern Pennsylvania Bach Festival in Scranton. Matthew Rupsich is music director and conductor of the Arcadia Chorale, and he paid a visit to the WVIA studios to, pardon the pun, walk us through the program and the importance of the festival in the region.
As you know, we have three concerts throughout the festival. The first one is an organ recital, and this year we're welcoming Thomas Dressler as our organist. And then the second concert on Saturday evening, we have the chamber music concert. And these are all individuals who come from the Arcadia Festival Orchestra. And Thomas Heintz, everybody knows Thomas Heintz here, wonderful oboe player. He is the artistic director for that concert. And with him and his colleagues, they put a wonderful program together. And then on Sunday, we do the choral concert with the Arcadia Chorale. So it's a diverse program, meaning we have an organ, we have chamber music, and we have the choral concert. And it's serious music, and it has been welcomed in this community for a long time. And I want to keep that tradition going. We need it here. And I think it's very special that Arcadia does this for our community. So I'm really proud of that.
And in that connection, then, the theme for this particular iteration of the Bach Festival, is a celebration.
Yeah, exactly. So this year's theme for our festival is called A Celebration of Milestones. As the, you know, as a music director trying to plan a season, I try to think of themes that are catchy and are fun, interesting, and compelling for our audience. And when I did some research, I've learned that some composers that I could highlight, such Palestrina, Stanford, Fauré, and Bruckner. Of course, we're doing Bach as well. And with Palestrina, we're celebrating the 430th anniversary of his death. Stanford, it's the 100th anniversary of his death. I should say Stanford and Fauré both are at the 100th anniversary of their death. And Bruckner is the 200th anniversary of his birth. Those are benchmarks. Those are milestones. I think, interesting, when I introduce the term myself, what are milestones, and doing a little research, a lot of times milestones are considered about getting something done. It's a project being done, and that's a milestone and something to celebrate. I agree. In the music world, I have to say we consider milestones such as anniversary and birth dates of composers who have passed and how we could lift them up. Now, I think I could be, I will say, clever or silly in some ways. There are many ways to consider a milestone. I think Arcadia Chorale producing the 37th annual NEPA Bach Festival is a milestone. It's 37 years. It's really something to celebrate. So what are the milestones for Bach? I will have to say I did this kind of loosely, but what I think is interesting is that these are milestones for me. I've never conducted these two works that we're performing, the Bach Cantata as well as the Mass that we're doing at the end of the program. And I think that's really important for me. So these are milestones for me that I'm able to lift up to the singers and the performers to do these works. And so it's a milestone represented in many different ways to present this incredible festival we have coming up.
You have Palestrina, so predating.
Absolutely.
Bach. So you're giving us a sound that developed without Bach in the world, mm-hmm. right?
We opened the program with Palestrina's Tu es Petrus. It's an Italian motet, comes from a set of six, and it's specifically talking about the founder of the Catholic Church, Peter, and being the solid rock of our church, if you would. It's a wonderful piece, six parts, so the chorale is divided into a, you know, larger group. And it's a beautiful work. It's a cappella, as most of Palestrina's work is, as well as during that time period. And it's a beautiful piece to introduce our audience to the chorale sound that we have. I think it's pure. I think it's quiet. And I think it's very moving when we focus on that text.
Matthew, you aren't moving chronologically from Palestrina to Bach and so on to the most contemporary composer on the program. How did you put things together?
So how I put the program together, I was looking at the larger picture. I wanted to find pieces that we either connected a period, style, or harmonic language so that it could flow through the program. The second piece that we're doing is Beati Quorum Via by Stanford. So as I mentioned earlier, 2024 will be the 100th anniversary of Stanford's death. He was born in Dublin. He's studied in England as well as in Leipzig. And basically, he remained mostly in England for the remainder of his life. And then he was considered one of the founders of the Royal College of Music. The Beati Quorum Via, this piece came from three Latin motets. Why did I want to do this piece? This is truly a selfish moment. I sang this piece when I was at the National Cathedral in Washington in my early 20s. I have extreme fond memories of doing this piece with Douglas Major, who was a chorus master there at the time. And, you know, as a youngster, being thrown into this ensemble, somewhat naive, and learning a wealth of repertoire because of singing every Sunday, as well as the evensong on that afternoon. So I wanted to have an opportunity to sing this piece with the chorale. It's another beautiful work, six parts again, a cappella. It's a motet. It moves nicely from Palestrina into the Stanford. And this particular text, it's very short, but the translation is just, happy are those whose way is blameless, who walk in the way of the Lord. It's quite simple. And it's interesting. It's a 3-4 time. At times you feel the piece in three, but then sometimes you feel it in one and how it moves. It's lyrical, it's joyful, and it's a piece that every choir should learn, I believe. I really do. And I know members of the Arcadia Chorale have sung it maybe within their church settings or in other ensembles, but I wanted to have the opportunity to do it with them because I loved it so much, and I've fond memories of doing it. Then we're moving to Fauré. Fauré, as I did my research, learning about anniversaries, you know, what composers are having anniversaries this year, I learned that 2024 is the 100th anniversary of Fauré's death. And here is another piece that I wanted to do with the chorale, Cantique de Jean Racine. I do believe this is another work that choirs should experience. This piece is rich in harmonic language. Now, we're moving much forward to the, you know, Romantic period and post-Romantic period with Fauré. It's rich. There's at times that I'll say the harmonic language is somewhat dark. It's expansive with regarding range. That sort of tells us where we're going, you know, in period of time and period of music. And this piece has a beautiful accompaniment written for it. And of course, our wonderful accompanist, Tsukasa Waltich, is playing beautifully. And so she is, as a collaborator, just really shaping what we're doing musically, which is really quite wonderful. It's great to, we're singing it in the original language in French. And it should be noted that this piece has sort of have three versions before I went through. We're doing the original version with piano, but it was done again for orchestra. It was done again for different kinds of settings. So I'm excited that we're doing it in its original format.
And Jean Racine in France, a playwright?
So Racine was a playwright, dramatist playwright, and Fauré was very fond of his work. And what's interesting is Racine was actually an orphan who was brought up in a convent, and he was supposed to become a priest. At least that's what the nuns wanted. But he had different eyes as being a poet as well as a dramatist. And what's interesting is actually King Louis XVI caught eye of him and was interested in his work and later actually welcomed him into his court. And so that's where he stayed and, you know, I'll say did his work. So this collaboration and affinity that Fauré had for Racine really lifts up his poetry and his work. It's quite wonderful. It's quite wonderful.
And it's fascinating to hear about the background and the respect, generational respect, the tradition again, where the poet of an earlier time is respected by a later age.
Absolutely. You know, those kinds of, it's almost not a relationship, but it's, as you said, looking back and giving an affinity towards other artists who do good work and finding ways to lift them up. And Fauré was able to do that through as being a composer. And this happens all the time, and it's continuing to happen with composers doing that kind of work. I'm glad we're able to lift up that poetry as well as the music of Fauré with this piece. I'm excited again about this next piece that we're doing by Bruckner. This is the 200th anniversary of Bruckner's birth that we're celebrating. And I'm a huge fan of Bruckner. I love his work. Reminds me of Brahms in some way. His music is expressive, very moving, touching, and rich in color. But what's interesting is the piece that we're doing for this concert is Locust Iste. This piece is a quiet, small motet. It might be even 60 measures long. It's quite short in length. But what's wonderful is that after his studies, he became the organist at the Linz Cathedral in Austria. And then later, he moved to Vienna to become a professor in the conservatory there. But he always had a true affinity back where he started at the Linz Cathedral. So in Linz, they built a new cathedral. And they wanted Bruckner to do something, again, because of that relationship. And so he wrote this piece, Locus Iste, for the votive chapel within the new cathedral. So it's a dedicatory piece for that specific chapel. And what's interesting, this text then obviously highlights that chapel and what Bruckner wanted to communicate through his music for that chapel. And one of this text is, this place was made by God, a priceless sacrament. It is without reproach. And it just, to me, this text talks about, and how Bruckner set it, the beauty of this space. And that's what this piece is. It's simple, it's light, but gorgeous. Another fave of mine, this is a favorite piece of mine, having had opportunities to conduct this before, But I will say that here I am with the Arcadia Chorale, this enormously talented ensemble. And for me to shape this piece with them is quite exciting. We finished the first half of the program with Bach's cantata, Herz und Mund und Tat und Leben. It's an Advent cantata, and it was originally written in 1716 in Weimar. Originally, it only had 6 movements. Later, as you know, when Bach travels or when Bach rewrites things, he rewrites his own works. Later, he revisited this cantata in Leipzig, and he added 4 more movements. And with that, basically, the movements were recitatives that he pulled from different other chorales. And what's special specifically about this cantata are movements 6 and 10. People will recognize movements 6 and 10 immediately because part of our Western culture, I think, is this music. And where it comes from is actually, we all know the piece Jesu Joy, A Man's Desiring. And the music for Jesu Joy, A Man's Desiring, came from this work, movement 6 and 10. But what's interesting is that where did the Jesu Joy, Man's Desire came from, or text came from, because it's not the same text in the cantata. So there's that discrepancy. Well, in 1926, Myra Hess, an English professional pianist, published a transcription of this chorale and titled it Jesu Joy, A Man's Desiring. And then, as I told the chorale, after it just took off. And every instrument, it's been arranged in so many different formats. It's been sung at weddings. During Advent. It's performed sometimes at Christmas and Easter. I mean, everybody knows this. But what's wonderful is that I learned for the first time that that melody, that tune, that chorale came from this cantata, from the movements numbers 6 and 10. So that's exciting for us and, you know, to communicate that to our audience. So I think it's important as a music director, I want my audience to hear new things and also be in a space where not everything is new, that they have some recollection of something. And when they start hearing this cantata, there's going to be an aha moment from the audience, I think, when we perform it. So the last piece on our program for the festival that the chorale will be singing is Bach's Mass number 3. This small mass was composed in about the 1730s, and there were about 4 masses that Bach worked on during this time. And they're considered short masses because Bach only takes the text from the ordinary mass of the Catholic Church of the first 2 movements, the Kyrie and the Gloria. So what's interesting, though, you may think, oh, that is a really short mass, but what Bach decided to do in this particular mass, the Gloria, he separated it into 4 or 5 movements and giving opportunities for solos from how he desired to compose it. So in this particular mass, the chorale is singing the first movement, the second movement, and the last movement. And then in between, that's where the solos are and small ensemble numbers, if you would. As usual, Bach stole from other pieces to create this piece. He stole from cantata number 104, as well as 72 and 187 to put this piece together. And this is a piece that it's about 30 minutes long. So for our second half, it's a good amount of time for us to pull this off. And I say pull it off because right now it's interesting. Movement 2 and 6 for the chorale, the second movement, the beginning of the Gloria, and the last movement, Cum Sancto Spiritu, with spirit, are very tough. The singers are singing melismas all over the place. And melismas basically meaning lots of notes, running notes that need to happen on the voice. Sometimes choral directors and orchestra directors, when they're working on pieces like this, I will tell my singers they got to sound like instrumentalists because I need the clarity and the detail. And I haven't worked with my orchestra yet, but when I start working with them, I'm going to ask them to be more lyrical to balance that what needs to happen. And it's been fun working with the chorale. I know they feel challenged, but they're, again, nailing this work. It's going to be quite lovely. And I think, frankly, surprising. People are going to be really... I don't want to use the term shocked, but they're going to be very excited and just kind of blown away by what the chorale is able to do to sing these melismas, these coloratura as an ensemble within this larger work. That will be very fun to see. And that's how we close our program for the chorale concert.
Yeah.
a question about this Mass. We know about the great B minor Mass and that people have said that he really didn't expect it to be performed in a liturgical setting. These Masses?
These Masses, I will say yes, because they're small. They're 25, 30 minute works, so they fit within the liturgical setting. What's also interesting, you know, Bach didn't create many Masses, and he obviously did more cantatas focusing on the German language, but here these Masses are in Latin. And, you know, as a Lutheran, you know, that is kind of different than his normal work. Since you mentioned the B minor Mass, I am happy to announce that Arcadia Chorale will be performing Bach's B minor Mass next season for the Nipah Bach Festival, for the 38th annual Nipah Bach Festival. We're excited about that. We received a donation from the founding director, Robert Dale Harima, and he gave us a donation in memory of his wife. And through conversations with him, we decided that we are going to put a majority of that donation to do a major project. And we are now planning for next year to do Bach's B minor Mass.
And it's great to have that lead time, isn't it?
Oh, exactly. We have a lot of planning to do. I would like to have a moment, if I may, talk about our organ concert, which is on the afternoon of the Saturday, which is March 16th at 4 p.m. We have a wonderful organist coming. His name is Thomas Dressler. Thomas Dressler is a Bach specialist, if you would. He is currently the choral director and organist at College Hill Presbyterian Church in Easton, Pennsylvania. He has taught at the college and university level. He is an expert in many ways of playing historic tracker organs. That is his specialty. And he has performed many places across the United States of these authentic instruments, of trying to find these authentic instruments to play these tracker organs. He has a degree in organ performance from Westminster Choir College and Susquehanna University. And he has been the dean of the Lehigh Valley chapter of the American Guild of Organists. So he is a recitalist. And so we welcome him with open arms to our festival. And he's doing an all Bach program. And I will use his words when we were talking about planning this. He shared with me that these are huge Bach organ pieces. So I'm looking forward to it. We have about seven pieces here. He opens the program with a pièce d'orgue. He's doing a trio, and he ends the program with the Prelude and Fugue in E minor, the large piece BWV 548, nicknamed the Wedge. As I said, it's a large program, and we are looking forward to him for this concert at Elm Park United Methodist Church in Scranton. As I each year experience our guest organist at Elm Park, I am always mesmerized with what these organists can do and how they create sound. And how they create sound that is connected to emotion. I'm always moved, always moved. Our chamber music concert is on Saturday evening at 7:30 p.m. at Covenant Presbyterian Church. Thomas Heinz, our artistic director, as well as his colleagues, put a beautiful program together. And basically, they're saying their program is a program of trios. That's what they're doing. So they're doing Beethoven, they're doing Weinert, they're also doing Fasch. And what's great about this program is we have the Beverly Trio coming in with Thomas Heinz as oboe, Harold Levin with viola, Gail Klaber as cello. They're doing a trio in D major by Bach. We have the Beethoven Serenade with Edward Vargo, flute, who's from our area, who plays beautifully. And we welcome Miho Matsuno, as well as Peggy McAdams. Peggy has played with us many years, and Miho is from New York. And we invited her to come in to join the festival orchestra as well as participate in the chamber music. They're doing the serenade, as I mentioned, Opus 25 by Beethoven. Something that I think is wonderful, how they're ending the program, is they're doing a trumpet concerto. And some of you may know Ralph Dungeon. He is a trumpet player extraordinaire in this area. And they're doing this three-movement short concerto by Johann Fasch. And I love how it's a chamber music concert, and Tom spent time putting the program together with his colleagues, as mentioned, to highlight individual strengths and to highlight individual composers and the trios according to the theme. But for this piece, the final piece, they're lifting up a very strong player, Ralph, in trumpet. They're coming together and giving him an opportunity to play. And this is going to be very exciting to see how that last piece on that concert closes the program.
We had a conversation today on Art Scene with Matthew Rupsich, who is music director and conductor of the Arcadia Chorale, speaking about the 37th annual Northeastern Pennsylvania Bach Festival this weekend, opening with an organ recital featuring Thomas Dressler, and that's Saturday, March 16th at 4 in the afternoon at Elm Park United Methodist Church in Scranton, and it's an all Bach program, as we heard, big Bach pieces. Saturday evening at 7:30, that's March 16th, at Covenant Presbyterian Church in Scranton, it's the chamber music concert under the artistic direction of Thomas Hines, music of Beethoven, Leo Weiner, Bach, and more. And then on Sunday, March 17th, at 3 in the afternoon, also at Covenant Presbyterian Church, there will be the much-anticipated choral concert under the direction of Matthew Rupsich, and we heard there will be Palestrina, Stanford, Fauré, Bruckner, and Bach. And we have an address, a website address for you, arcadiachorale.org, arcadiachorale.org, for all the information you need about the 37th annual Northeastern Pennsylvania Bach Festival this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, March 16th and 17th. The Elm Park United Methodist Church concert is the organ recital with Thomas Dressler, and that's Saturday afternoon at 4, and there's no admission charge. The chamber music concert is that evening, and it moves to Covenant Presbyterian Church under the direction of Thomas Hines. And then the choral concert will be Sunday, March 17th at 3 in the afternoon, also at Covenant Presbyterian Church. For more information, arcadiachorale.org, arcadiachorale.org. And the chamber music concert will close with this concerto in D major by Johann Friedrich Fasch.